I'm Dr. Warren Levin of New York City, and I'm sending you this communication to bring you up to date on the situation that threatens my practice and your business. I am certain that everyone listening to this tape is aware of the armed raid by the FDA on the office of my friend Jonathan Wright in the state of Washington, and the enormous impact that the popular outcry as a result had upon the proposed federal legislation on nutritional labeling. That demonstrates very clearly the power of the people. However, in my home state of New York, not everyone in the health food industry is aware of the state's efforts to squelch the nutritional approach to health. Since I am right now at the center of that cyclone, I felt that I should bring you up to date and tell you what I need you to do so that we can all continue to earn our living helping the great American public towards a healthier lifestyle. It's difficult to convey the entire story in a reasonable period of time. But for this targeted listening audience, the time spent, I think, will be of great interest and hopefully a valuable investment. I opened the first holistic center in the city of New York in 1974. It was in the garden level of my home in a brownstone in Brooklyn Heights. In 1979, I moved to the Wall Street area at the World Trade Center in an attempt to create the first center for executives as the World Health Medical Group. I was the first physician to administer intravenous chelation therapy in the state of New York, and still have supervised more chelation than any other New York practitioner. And for those of you who have been around a while, I'm proud to invoke the name of Carlton Fredericks as my personal mentor, friend, and godfather of my six-year-old daughter, Erica. Now, I have been under investigation by the Office of Professional Medical Conduct, from now on I'll call it the OPMC, since 1976. My first inkling of this was a subpoena that I received in 1980, which demanded that I turn over certain patient records to OPMC. They refused to tell me who had reported me and what the alleged complaint was about, and I felt that was unconstitutional, so I went to court. And I was successful in getting the subpoena quashed by the judge. That was the first step in a six-year process because the state appealed the verdict. They were upheld in the appellate division, but by a split decision, so we went to the Court of Appeals in Albany, where, in beautiful language, the court upheld my rights. They said there must be a threshold showing of the authenticity of a complaint as warranting investigation, and they said it is fitting that before the investigative engines of governmental agencies are started up against an individual, at least minimal warrant is shown for such an intrusion. Instead of providing me with the information, they waited 6 months, and then they issued the same subpoena again. And I was forced to go into court a second time over the same issue. And this time, over our serious objections, they presented the basis of their investigation to the judge in the privacy of his chambers, without me or my attorney being present. The judge found that they had adequate reason to investigate me, so he allowed the subpoena to stand. Once again, we appealed, and once again, we had to go all the way to the Court of Appeals in Albany, and this time, I lost. So, after about $50,000 and 6 years of fighting the government, I turned over my records. It took them another 3 years to bring me up on charges. But finally, in 1989, I was officially charged with gross incompetence, and fraud for practicing complementary medicine, including glucose tolerance tests, vitamin and mineral tests and treatment, stool analysis, intravenous chelation therapy, and ultimately clinical ecology, the diagnosis of candida infection, and so on. Altogether, there were over 140 separate allegations of misconduct, many of which were repetitious for different patients, but all of them representative of my practice of orthomolecular complementary medicine. I have listed a synopsis of those charges on one of the enclosures. Please take careful notice that with all of the charges and allegations, there is not a single charge of any harm to any patient And that's after 13 years of investigation. When we got to the hearings, we learned that the state had only one witness that they felt was qualified to testify against me. That is the self-anointed, self-appointed quackbuster of medicine, doctor and lawyer Victor Herbert. Of course, I knew that Victor Herbert was a malicious demagogue who would stop at nothing to achieve his objective. So with the help of my friends all over the country, I put together the evidence to show the judge that Victor Herbert had no business being in that hearing as my inquisitor. The result was that after 2 days of presenting our evidence about Victor Herbert to the hearing panel and the administrative law judge, the judge dismissed Herbert as being unfit to be an expert. One reason was that he said he had no prejudice with me, after which we produced the transcript of the hearings held by Congressman Claude Pepper in investigation of so-called health fraud, where Herbert had named me 5 times as practicing questionable medicine. And we also produced a copy of an editorial he had written in the New York State Medical Journal, in which he had bragged about reporting physicians who practiced questionable medicine to the Office of Professional Medical Conduct. But the final straw was when my attorney, Robert Harris of Woodmere, New York, specifically asked Herbert whether he had reported me to the OPMC, pointing out that if he was both the complainant and the expert witness, it was important that the hearing committee be aware of that. The state's attorney advised them not to answer the question, and he refused to do that. Well, I was not aware, and perhaps you are not either, but an expert witness is not entitled to the legal counsel of the prosecuting attorney. However, you can be sure that Victor Herbert knew that because he's a lawyer. And you can be sure that the state's attorney knew it as well. And Mr. Harris pointed it out immediately as indicative of what he called the incestuous nature of the relationship between the Department of Health and this expert witness. The judge called a recess, and when we reconvened a week later, the judge read a beautiful 3-page legal decision based upon his interpretation of the law in question, which provides confidentiality to people who submit complaints to the Medical Board of Inquiry. And it was his ruling that under these circumstances, that confidentiality had to be waived. And he explained to Victor Herbert that although he was not qualified to hold him in contempt of court, that if he refused to answer the question, he would be dismissed as a witness. And Herbert again refused on the advice of counsel, and he was thrown out. The hearing committee had heard no evidence against me, and the state said that they didn't have another witness who was qualified to testify. So the hearing panel made a recommendation that all the charges be dropped. And it was at that point that the next serious breach of my constitutional rights took place, because the panel's recommendation was reviewed by the Commissioner of Health, at that time Dr. David Axelrod. He is a doctor, not a lawyer. But he overturned the judge's legal determination that Herbert was unfit to be a witness, and he remanded me back into the hearings with the same panel, the same judge, and Victor Herbert as the expert witness. Well, we appealed to the courts through what we called a writ of prohibition, but they indicated that they would not review that decision until the administrative process was completed. So we have had 2.5 years of hearings with Victor Herbert testifying for the state. The transcript is well over 5,000 pages long. And that sworn testimony clearly reveals Victor Herbert as a liar with a bias and many areas of ignorance about basic nutritional science. Now, I have another tape which goes on for about 2 hours in which I discuss Victor Herbert's tainted testimony, citing chapter and verse from the pages of my transcript. And it's available on request from the Warren M. Levin Legal Offense Fund. Fortunately, my transcript is not all Victor Herbert, because when he was finally through, Then we had our opportunity to present our side of the story. It included my testimony, of course, and I consider myself an articulate spokesman for this cause. But I'm not in the same league with Linus Pauling, the only person ever to win two solo Nobel Prizes, and who, just incidentally, has 48 PhD degrees. I was privileged to read into the record the opening lines from Dr. Pauling's introduction to a textbook on chelation therapy that was recently published by the American College of Advancement in Medicine. He starts off saying that for the past 20 years, he, the genius of Linus Pauling, has devoted most of his life to research and education in the field of nutrition. That man, over 90 years old, came to testify and spent 5.5 hours before my hearing committee. He was first questioned on direct by my attorney, and he testified that Victor Herbert was not a scientist, but that he brought severe bias to his evaluations. And he said some beautiful things about me as being representative of the kind of medicine that would have to be practiced in the future. And then the state's attorney had his opportunity for cross-examination, and then there was redirect and recross, and then the panel had unlimited opportunity to question this great man. He didn't take a dime from me for his transportation, for his lodging. We did take him out to dinner. Would you believe that in their evaluation of the witnesses, the hearing panel stated that because Linus Pauling is not an MD, his 5.5 hours of testimony were not germane to an investigation of orthomolecular medicine when he invented the term? And then we brought on other stellar witnesses besides Dr. Pauling. Dr. James Carter, MD, Doctor of Public Health, and a consultant to the World Health Organization. Chairman of the Department of Nutrition at Tulane Medical School. They found him not a credible witness. Richard Kastorf, MD and PhD from his fellowship at Mayo, who was chief of cardiology at a community hospital in Long Beach, California, who served 2 years as president of ACAM, the Organization of Chelating Physicians, who has supervised thousands of intravenous chelations. He was not found credible because he had been unable to get his studies published in the peer-reviewed journals simply because those journals are run by the opposition. And Abram Hoffer, MD and PhD, is the father of biological approach to psychiatry. Did the first double-blind controlled studies on the use of megadoses of niacinamide over a quarter of a century ago on psychiatric patients. They found him not credible. And my good friend and compatriot Robert Atkins, MD, who is not only director of one of the largest complementary practices in the country, but also has undertaken the formidable task of attempting to fill the shoes of the late Carlton Fredericks on WOR radio and its syndicated stations. They didn't find him credible because he's not board certified and doesn't have a hospital affiliation. So that all his years and experience is of no meaning to them. They chose to ignore the testimony of Marjorie Crandall, PhD, a prominent mycologist that is an expert in yeasts and fungi, who, despite her years of research and expertise, suffered from the Candida syndrome without knowing it, and who turned her life around when she learned what Candida can do to human beings. And she now functions as the director of a consulting service for patients with Candida. Her experience was not significant. We had a lot more experts who were willing to come and testify, but 2.5 years is a long time, and Mr. Harris and I felt that we had clearly given adequate scientific basis, so we rested our case. We were shocked when the prosecuting attorney stood up and announced that since we had brought in a number of experts that he didn't think were really experts, the state had decided to bring in an additional expert or two to refute our testimony. Mr. Harris gleefully reminded him that he had earlier said there was no one in the whole world except Victor Herbert qualified to testify in this case. Anyone else would have been ancillary or superfluous. Those were words in the record. It was obvious Mr. Sheehan knew that we had destroyed his case. The final major expert, stellar was the word that was used to describe him, was Dr. Michael Victor Herman. It's almost too coincidental, isn't it? Well, Dr. Herman is chairman of the Department of Cardiology at Westchester County Medical Center in Valhalla, and he's a full professor of its associated New York Medical College. He sits on the editorial board of 2 major cardiology journals, and he claimed to have written about 150 articles in the peer-reviewed literature. Mr. Harris says he looks like a cardiologist that was called out of central casting, tall, distinguished, gray-haired, and impeccably attired. One could feel the palpable awe in the room as his curriculum vitae was intoned by the prosecutor. When the first question came up about chelation therapy, however, Mr. Harris immediately objected, and the judge was shocked. He asked what the objection was. Mr. Harris said that he and I had been able to obtain only 116 of the articles that this expert said he had written, but that we had read them all, and there was not a single mention of the word chelation. Dr. Herman acknowledged that he had never written anything about it. Mr. Harris attempted to challenge Dr. Herman's credibility as an expert, but the judge refused to allow that line of questioning. So we were forced to listen to Dr. Herman spout the party line and castigate chelation therapy until it was time for cross-examination. This time I will not read specific pages and lines. I will give you the gist of the questioning and the responses. Mr. Harris asked, "Did you ever study chelation therapy in medical school?" "No." "In your internship or residency?" "No." "In your subsequent position as cardiologist at various teaching centers?" "No." "Did you ever administer chelation therapy?" "No." "Have you ever spoken to a patient who had chelation therapy?" "No." "Have you ever discussed with a physician who practices chelation therapy what this therapy does?" "No." "Did you review the testimony of the experts in the articles and evidence on chelation therapy?" "No." Certainly, with a couple of months' notice, you asked the medical librarian at Westchester Medical Center to run you a computer search so you'd know what the current thinking is? "No." "Well, Dr. Herman, just how did you prepare yourself to come to testify to take away this physician's license if you don't know anything about this subject?" "Well," he said, "I looked in my files. I found an editorial by Dr. Sofer." Ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Sofer is the editor of the journal Chest. It is the journal of the thoracic surgeons. It's possible that he might have a conflict of interest about chelation therapy. In addition, the last editorial that Dr. Sofer wrote that I've been able to find was from 1984, and Dr. Herman was testifying in 1991. It's possible something new was known about it. He also said that he had read the package insert about the drug which comes with each vial, and we had already established that the package insert is not the ultimate criterion of use. The last thing that he had found in his file and reviewed was the position paper of the Medical Society of New York, which was prepared by a bunch of people who didn't know any more about it than he did. Well, I must confess, I was climbing the walls, and my own attorney asked me to leave the room, but I made very sure that the panel understood the obscenity that they had just witnessed of a fine cardiologist stooping so low that he was willing to testify under oath that chelation was worthless without knowing anything about it and not even having the intellectual curiosity to find out what our experts had testified to about it. That was basically the end of the hearing, except for the summation, and the panel then retired to come up with its recommendation. It took them over 10 months of deliberation, and they produced a 127-page document which ended up with the recommendation that the state of New York revoke my license to practice medicine. They justified that decision by finding that Victor Herbert, although clearly biased and inflammatory, was nevertheless an authoritative witness. This, mind you, in spite of the fact that he didn't know what the essential fatty acids are for humans. He claimed that RNA broke down into constituent amino acids, which it doesn't have any of. He claimed that folate deficiency doesn't cause brain damage when it has been reported in the literature very clearly. I mean, it's inconceivable that any objective listener could give one iota of credence to the testimony of a man who lied and screamed and cursed and flouted the judge's orders. But that's what they did. And Linus Pauling wasn't germane. Can you believe that? But as they say, you ain't heard nothing yet. Their final ruthless attempt at a power play culminated the 13-year vendetta. All along, the pretense has been that the hearing panel was an objective body, ready to listen to both sides, weigh the evidence fairly, and render an honest scientific verdict. Well, having heard Dr. Michael Victor Herman admit under oath that he had no knowledge of chelation therapy other than someone else's opinion, they not only considered his testimony anyway, but they went out of their way to label him a credible and authoritative expert. Thus, the kangaroo court justified its kangaroo decision, and they expect to be able to get away with it, just the same way that Dr. Kessler expected to be able to get away with an armed raid on Jonathan Wright, and to get away with keeping tryptophan off the shelves even though the problem was a contaminated batch, having nothing to do with tryptophan. The list of unconscionable and unjustifiable repressions grows almost daily at all levels of government. If we do not take advantage of this moment, when the great American public is already up in arms about the obscenity of medical care run by the pharmaceutical, medical, surgical, industrial, health insurance complex, if we do not demand in large numbers the right to have the nutritional alternative, the complementary approach, the holistic way, before the end of 1993, they will pass us by, and Kessler and Herbert will have the last laugh. But we've got them, guys. It is on the record. That record is coming before an extraordinary and unique body, the Board of Regents of the State of New York. It appears as though I am going to be the last physician heard by the Board of Regents, because in the fall of 1991, the legislature was boondoggled and bamboozled by the health industry into passing a law, and that law says the Board of Regents no longer has a role to play in determining a physician's license. The reason for that is that the regents had overturned almost 40% of the recommended revocations by the Department of Health. And the Department of Health was getting frustrated because they were not able to complete their agenda of totally controlling the practice of medicine. You know, just as the police don't want a civilian review board, the doctors don't want a bunch of civilians reviewing their administrative positions. But we still have this opportunity because my case began under the old law. It is very interesting that the courts in the United States carry a burden, like so many things, yin and yang, a two-way street, a double-edged sword. It is the burden of observing precedents. The precedent in this country is that the courts keep their hands off the administrative processes, saying basically, look, we've set up these administrative jurisdictions to handle administrative problems. The courts are here to take care of civil and criminal offenses. Therefore, it is exceedingly difficult to overturn administrative decisions in the courts. But the Board of Regents is the opportunity for final appeal in administrative dispositions in New York State, and they are not beholden to anyone except the public. They are there to protect the public. The Department of Health and the OPMC say that the public has to be protected from guys like me and from the health food industry. They say that the medical consumer is ignorant and taken in by the fraudulent notions of complementary medicine. But if the great American public speaks loudly, they can drown out such nonsense. They did it in the Senate to the tune of over 94-1 in overturning the recommendations. That was directly the result of an avalanche of letters and phone calls, and the politicians responded. You remember the old saying, politicians don't see the light, they feel the heat. Well, the Board of Regents is not an elected body, but they are above reproach. They will be responsive to the will of the people if it is adequately made known. And that's why I'm calling upon you, because each of you has his or her own constituency. The people who come into your store believe in this kind of medicine. They are sent there by doctors like us, as well as by other practitioners who utilize nutrition, and by word of mouth. But having MDs for you to refer to is almost as important as having the referrals from us to you. So this is your case, too, and it's coming up fast all of a sudden. Because now the new Commissioner of Health, Mark Chasson, MD, has just rubber-stamped the committee's recommendation. And we are officially at the last step waiting for our appeal before the Board of Regents. I need two things to make this victory complete. Number one, I need enough letters and postcards to overwhelm the opposition. And if each of you listening can get only 100 of your customers to sign and send a letter such as the one enclosed, we will indeed overwhelm them with the might of our numbers. I'd like each of you to be responsible for more than that with networking. Number two, all that would do would be allow me to keep my license. Believe me, I want that very much. But all along, it has been my position that this is a test case. They're not just after Warren Levin. They are after complementary medicine, and all of my fellow practitioners are going to be targeted once they have this precedent-setting decision. And the only way to stop that is to change the law. And in order to do that, we have to have money to fund a publicity campaign so that this victory doesn't get lost in the back pages of the newspapers, combined with Jonathan Wright and tryptophan, and dozen other flagrant abuses of the rights of physicians and health food store owners and vitamin manufacturers and clinical ecologists and homeopaths. The list goes on and on. There are very few able to sustain the financial expense of the prolonged harassment by the state bureaucracy. Indeed, the only reason that I've survived the ordeal was that I was able to get financial contributions to help me in my defense. Now is the time for an offensive. We can get this message out. They have gone too far. The idea that Victor Herbert and Michael Victor Herman can be considered credible in the face of the sworn testimony is more than Americans are willing to swallow. I do not think that we can expect to be given a similar opportunity to expose and discredit and restrain once and for all this system that is driving American medicine away from healing, away from awe and wonder and reverence for all the divine and miraculous healing power of nature that renders man's technology puny by comparison. Think of it. The hearing panel sustained the charge against me that I was fraudulent and therefore unworthy to practice medicine in the state of New York because I administered a vitamin. To quote the prosecutor, I don't care if it's injected or oral or rubbed onto the skin, it's irrelevant. And that amended charge was sustained by the panel as cause of revocation of my license. We cannot let that kind of aberrational thinking persist without a fight, or surely we are lost. In response to 100,000 letters, the Board of Regents will overturn this outrageous kangaroo decision rendered by the OPMC and the Commissioner. And those same letters will be able to generate enough pressure in the legislature to create new state laws guaranteeing practitioners the freedom to practice and patients the right to choose the complementary methods. We have a promise from Representative Harvey Weisenberg in the New York State Legislature that he will open his office to our cause and spearhead a drive for such legislation. When such a law is in effect, patients will be able to be reimbursed by their health insurance for wellness care procedures. Alaska was the first state to pass such laws after the heroic efforts of Dr. Robert Rowan. But when New York State follows, so will the entire nation. As I dictate this message, it is the dawn of a new year, 1993. I'm standing in my home, flushed with the joy of the holidays shared with my family. And I ask myself, is New York State serious? Is it really their intention to strip me of my license, my livelihood, my home, and all of my possessions after more than 35 years of practice on the basis of tainted testimony before a prejudiced set of inquisitors? Am I really important enough to justify the estimated $750,000 that they've invested already in this prolonged persecution? Whether I win or lose at this point, they have already succeeded in permanently damaging my personal and professional life that I have worked for all these years, and in negating my financial preparations for the future. With all of the pressures of this interminable harassment, they have simultaneously created a situation that precludes any reasonable physician from joining me in practice to fulfill my vision of the World Health Medical Group. That has resulted in my having to struggle to meet the obligations of a group practice on my shoulders alone. I have had 1 2-week vacation in the past 5 years, and I have just been hit with legal bills for the region's hearing alone that already exceed $50,000. There is no insurance to cover these expenses. I'm proud of what I've done and of what I stand for. I want to see this process through to full victory, not just for my license, but for the rights of doctors and their patients to choose complementary medicine. But I can't do it without the full support of you out there. One of the strategies of medical boards has long been to win by bankrupting the accused physician. If they succeed, I will be unable to continue the fight. Obviously, not everyone can make major financial contributions, but every letter counts, and those that can't contribute money can give of their time to get other letters and contributions. The key to this effort is the health food store owners and their customers. Together we can and we must prevail. I am going before the regions with two attorneys. Bob Harris has fought for me tooth and nail since the charges were first brought 3.5 years ago. He will continue to defend me and my right to practice. Michael Kennedy is an activist lawyer who made his mark defending the Native Americans at Wounded Knee and going to jail for the Chicago Seven. He has been retained to represent all those who feel their right to choose their physician, and his philosophy of practice is imperiled if I should lose this appeal. Any contributor of $100 or more will be mentioned by name in the list of petitioners. But all letters will be counted and submitted regardless of monetary contribution. And yes, every dollar does count to keep us in this fight and to use our successful appeal before the regions as a springboard to make the leap the freedom of choice for all New Yorkers and ultimately all Americans. So here's what I'm asking you to do. First of all, look over all the material that I've sent. I think it's important that you understand exactly what has happened. Then make at least 100 copies of the letter addressed to my legal defense fund care of Michael Kennedy. And put one in with every order that you sell. And talk to your customers about the importance of their making their voices heard and their dollars count. You know, I don't think that there is another retail industry remotely resembling health food store owners in their dedication and their zeal and their commitment to what they do. We know how many of these letters are going out. It would be wonderful if we could get 100% return from you, dear listener, as a representative of this industry. At least a letter. And make it identifiable to Mr. Kennedy's office by big letters on the outside, health food store owner. And let's see if we can't show them the solidarity of this community. They would never get it from electric light bulb stores or vacuum cleaner stores or sewing machine stores, but health food store owners are special. They are committed. Show your commitment to this cause and let's really stand up and be counted. You can count on me to see this through to the bitter end. I'm counting on you for your support. Let's make sure that 1993 is the year that will be remembered as the turning point in freedom of choice for medical care in the United States. Thank you.